Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as James, he's our guy.
We still got James Harden. Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us today is none other than the podfather himself, Rockets Wire editor Ben Dubose. Ben's here to chat with us about everything that's been going on over these last, we'll say, 72, 96 hours with the Houston Rockets. How's it going, Ben?
Pretty good. Finally able to exhale a little bit now that at least we're not getting 3 a.m. updates anymore of the latest videos of James Harden in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I normally try to get the pods out, you know, the night before, and I actually delayed our Tuesday episode just because I was like, you know what, I need to see if we're going to get another, you know, 4 a.m. update of James Harden still partying in Vegas. But he is reportedly in Houston undergoing COVID-19 testing protocols, but right now it is TBD when he'll be able to officially rejoin the team for team activities. It's not looking likely that he'll play in the preseason opener against the Chicago Bulls in Chicago. But just based on what we know so far, you know, when are you expecting that we might be able to see Harden suit up? And just what do you think, at this point, what do you even think we're getting with James Harden? Just give me your initial impression. Are we getting, you know, Toronto Vince Carter? Do we think he might be able to buy in up until the trade deadline? What's your initial read on this?
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I think we're not going to have a real good sense of his state of mind until there's a media session. And that's not going to be for at least a couple of days, I wouldn't think. PJ Tucker, they didn't do his until Monday, which was his first day of practice. So in terms of whether Harden will be fully committed, or if this is something like, you know, the 2015-2016 season, when defensively you could tell he just sort of went through the motions a little bit when the chemistry was off, I'm not sure. I hope that he realizes that to get the return that the Rockets are seeking for a top five player that's under contract, he needs to play well. If he plays well, it can help, quite frankly, both of them. It can help him get to the destination by building his market. And of course, it can make the Rockets comfortable enough to do a deal. But a lot of it, we're not going to truly know until we hear from them. And that's the crazy thing about it. We have still not heard from James Harden. This has been going on for weeks, ever since the trade request. And he has not even done a single offseason interview, not in radio, not in TV, not in print, just total radio silence. So I think it's hard to project what we're going to get from Harden until we actually hear from him and get a sense as to his state of mind. But as far as I see it, I think overall it's a pretty positive day for the Rockets. Again, there's a lot of sort of asterisk you have to put on it as far as when he'll be with the team. My guess is that the soonest you'd see him play is probably the two home games against San Antonio next week. I believe it's Tuesday and Thursday. If he's not cleared to travel with the team to Chicago and it's a Friday night game, they have to go up there on Thursday. So my guess is that if he hasn't practiced, and I doubt he's going to be able to practice by then, because from what I've read, it's sort of complicated, but I think he has to have 3 days consecutively of testing negative, then I doubt they throw him in a game without having practiced, in a preseason game, that is. And if he doesn't travel with the team, then because of COVID protocols, the NBA does not want these guys taking non-approved transportation. You know, they want them on the team flight so that they can feel secure that it's their environment. So my guess, with it being the preseason, unless Harden is cleared to practice by Thursday, and I'm not sure how that would be, I doubt he's with the team in Chicago, because it's just not worth it to transport him separately, especially in the preseason. As far as the bigger picture, though, I think today's a really positive day, because of basically two pieces of news that showed you that Harden is willing to budge in terms of his bargaining position, that there at least is some component of bluffing to it. Number one, obviously, he reported to Toyota Center. He's going through COVID testing. So for those wondering, would he stay away from the team throughout training camp, throughout the preseason? Would he miss paychecks? This is a pretty clear signal, no. Basically, what Harden is doing this week with the testing, it's what players, the rest of the team, did last week so that they could begin group activities on Sunday. There's no reason for him to do his testing at Toyota Center if he's not going to report. So effectively, this is reporting. And so if you were fearing a holdout that would go on for weeks, this should ease your mind as far as that goes. The other thing that's noteworthy is the report from Adrian Wojnarowski and Tim McMahon that now Harden is open to Philadelphia and perhaps other contenders beyond Brooklyn. Because I can tell you, Jackson, in mid-November when this leaked, it was pretty clearly Brooklyn or bust. There were lots of reports saying basically that Harden's mind was made up after working out with Kevin Durant in the offseason. It seems that the message has gotten through to Harden and his camp that Brooklyn just does not have the high-level assets. So, of course, Philadelphia makes more sense, not just because it's Daryl Morey, but because Daryl Morey conceivably could give up a piece such as Ben Simmons that makes a lot more sense for the rebuilding Rockets and would actually get them to part with James Harden having 2 years left on his contract. So when you look at it at a truly macro level, to me, those are the big takeaways from today. We have seen James Harden move on not one, but two fronts, reporting to the Rockets and also showing a willingness to expand his trade list beyond Brooklyn. Now, there's still a ways to go. I'm not saying that that proves that he's eventually going to make nice with the Rockets and sign an extension or be happy with playing. There's a lot of steps to go. But what I think this should show you above all else is that there was some posturing in recent days and weeks, because Tuesday we saw clear signs of movement by James Harden in a favorable direction to the Rockets. And hopefully that continues in the days ahead.
And this is something that you and I specifically have discussed on this very podcast before, but and it's something that's been echoed around is, you know, we need to maintain that nothing is a given in this NBA. And I think that's one of the things that I find so mind-boggling about Harden's request, is specifically, you know, Brooklyn or bust for, so you know, up until recently, up until Tuesday, when he you know, reportedly opened up his trade destinations. But there is no given that Brooklyn even, you know, would be a cakewalk to the finals or a cakewalk to a chip. You know, yes, does it increase his chances? Absolutely. But there would be question marks surrounding Kevin Durant's health. There's question marks surrounding potentially the depth and the structure of the team, depending on those assets that they would have to give up to acquire James Harden if the Rockets were to accept the poo-poo platter of role players from the Nets. But beyond all that, you know, it's if they get Harden suited up and if he plays at least at a competent level, you know, and has some level of buy-in, then you start the season off and then maybe the Rockets come out, you know, guns blazing and they have a really strong start to the season and Harden looks around him and he realizes, oh, wow, John Wall is healthy. DeMarcus Cousins is healthy. This team is versatile and talented and this might actually be a legitimate championship contender if I just buy in a little bit further. And so you give yourself that chance by trying to open the season with him.
Especially in 2021, because the landscape is going to be so wide open given the COVID dynamics. There really doesn't appear to be any true super team other than the Lakers. So it's not as if you're hearing James Harden accept, and it seems to be pretty clear that the Brooklyn deal, not that it's not going to happen. I don't want to say that he can't go to Brooklyn, but at least as it's presently constructed, it's not. Maybe Brooklyn can find a third or a fourth team to get the assets to satisfy Houston, someone that really wants Caris LeVert or any of these other spare parts from the Nets. I don't know. The bottom line is, though, you're seeing Harden sort of accept the fact that there are other alternatives, other options besides Brooklyn. And truth be told, on paper, I don't know why Philly, especially if they have to give up Ben Simmons to get a deal, is that much better than the current situation in Houston. Even in the East, there's several teams at the top of the East that are very, very good. So I think you can make an argument. There's a lot of ifs, but yeah, you get into the season, there's at least a chance. If those ifs check out with regards to John Wall, Boogie Cousins, Christian Wood, and the small sample size, then yeah, you could see at least for 2021. And again, it's a league that there's not really a super team right now other than the Lakers. And there's going to be all sorts of uncertainty because of COVID, the absences, a disjointed season. You can mount a case that at least for 1 year, maybe this is his best shot. And then we can pick this up again in the 2021 offseason. Of course, if it doesn't work out that way, then I'm sure by the trade deadline in March, then this can be reignited. It doesn't take very long. It just takes one phone call. But yeah, I'm right there with you. It at least gives you a chance. And the other piece of this, I know you touched on this earlier in the week, but John Wall has so much pedigree in this league. I know he hasn't played in the last couple of years, but he's only 30 years old. The players and coaches at training camp with the Rockets have raved about how he's looked this week. What John Wall said Sunday about having talked to Harden since the trade and for sure expecting Harden with the Rockets this year, I cannot see Harden yanking John Wall around. Now, I'm not saying that that proves that this is all fake news. No, absolutely not. But at least in Harden's mind, on some level, the Rockets are a satisfactory option. It's something that he can live with. It's should have, and now it's pretty clear with him reporting, he's not going to hold out. There's at least a scenario where he can see some intrigue with this. So there's still a ways to go to actually get that to where that's the top option in Harden's mind. But there's at least a path now, which is a lot better than a day or two ago when we were waking up to, you know, new club videos from Harden in Vegas posted at about 3 a.m.
Yeah, nothing is a nicer change of pace than not having to wake up to those videos, thank goodness. Hopefully we can put that behind us. But I do have, before we change gears here and get into talking about Stephen Silas as well as some of the other guys throughout the training camp and some of those stories, because I don't want to focus this pod on the entirety of James Harden, even though he is the biggest story, there are still other stories that we want to touch base on. And I do have one more question about Harden that I want to get to, but we'll get there in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. It's time to be able to start enjoying your protein bars, and you can do that with Built Bar. They've got 18 delicious, amazing flavors. You can check them out. Cookies and cream, carrot cake, salted caramel, double chocolate mousse, my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie. Just can't go wrong with them. 18 incredible flavors, the 12 OG flavors, 6 new flavors. These bars, they're covered in 100% delicious chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're not gritty or chalky like some other protein bar brands out there. And here's the thing, right? They're basically not even a protein bar. It's basically like eating a candy bar that's jam-packed with like 20 grams of protein. Again, they're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing for a keto diet. Amazing if you're trying to lose weight. Amazing if you're trying to hit those protein goals on a daily basis. And you can check it out. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose. Now, Ben, I've got this, it's a tall order question here for you, but short of, you know, based on everything that we've seen play out to this point, and how wacky this offseason has been, and now that we've got reports surfacing, Kelly Eco did a you know, beautiful reporting job talking about the fact that this isn't the first time that James Harden has, you know, delivered an ultimatum to the Rockets franchise, basically saying, you know, build a, you know, get me a contender, get, you know, put a contender around me or trade me, which is what ultimately led to the Russell Westbrook trade and you know, getting his buddy here in Houston. But looking at how everything has played out to this point, short of winning a ring for the Houston Rockets, short of winning a ring here in Houston, has Harden done irreparable damage to his Rockets legacy? Because I kind of think he has at this point.
Boy, that's a good question. I would say probably, but I think there's an opportunity, especially when he first meets with the media. I think the earliest would probably be Thursday, and if not Thursday, it would probably be early next week, because again, they're going to be in Chicago over the weekend, and I tend to doubt he'll be with the team just because I don't think he'll be cleared to travel. I think if he owns it, if he explains how it happened and he makes it clear that, you know what, I'm just focused on one day at a time, I'm with the Rockets, and basically has some degree of accountability and perhaps some remorse. I don't know that he'll outright say that mistakes were made, but at least say something that suggests that he could have handled it in a different way. And then, of course, goes out and plays well. Look, wins cure all. And of course, you know, we want him to win a championship. But I think it's one of those things where if they start the year, you know, 10-3 and everything is clicking, people will sort of forget this. Just when people, you know, again, there is a certain, I said this on Twitter the other day, there's a social media amplification effect. You know, things got pretty ugly. If you go back and read the newspaper articles between Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets back in 92, before there was an ownership change. And of course, he had the trade request. And there were a lot of mean things said in the papers, but it wasn't blown up to the extent that this is. Now, I understand clubbing indoors without a mask during a pandemic. I understand that storyline. But in general, in terms of what it meant for the team in particular, there were pretty harsh things said. It just, this one seems worse because there's that immediate social media amplification effect when you see so many accounts retweeting the same stuff over and over again, and it feels overwhelming. But there have been some uncomfortable situations that people have been able to walk back or move on from, and I will concede that it, more likely than not, this is something that we're going to remember negatively when it comes to Harden's legacy that didn't need to happen, because I think it was the Zach Lowe and Tim McMahon podcast. They were pointing out that it would probably reach the same conclusion in terms of when and what he'd be traded for, no matter how he handled it. So this wasn't really necessary. And my guess is that's how it plays out. But there's at least a path, I think, if he plays well, if he owns it some in his first comments, that I think most people will be some somewhat understanding of the frustration. So I would say it could. I'm just not willing to say 100% at this point.
Man, wasn't life a whole heck of a lot easier when the biggest Rocket scandal we were dealing with were the sexcapades of Daniel House Jr.?
Oh, yeah. You know, the funny thing, so today was Daniel House's second media availability.
Yeah.
No one's even talking about that.
Not at all. It's
there was the apology leading off last week, yep. And I mentioned it before then. Daniel House might be the luckiest person, because that would have been a huge storyline normally going into training camp. Can he rebuild the bonds of trust with his teammates? And now, you know, that's a subplot. That's, you know, people have forgotten about it. And, you know, go back. If you think back to the start of that Lakers series, there were quotes from Mike D'Antoni after, I think, the first couple of games. House played really well in game two, which ended up being the last game he played of the playoffs, talking about how he believed that House could be one of the best players in the league, that he still had a lot more room to grow in the future. And, you know, we wondered if all of that was sort of going to get just overwhelmed by the baggage of what happened. Honestly, I don't think that's the case. And so if you want to be optimistic about the Rockets, yeah, you can argue that maybe Daniel House is now able to take a step forward and, you know, get past the incident that happened a few months ago in a way that no one, or at least very few of us, really expected him to have the opportunity to do. Now, obviously, the circumstances that led to him having that opportunity, sort of unfortunate, the Harden cloud hanging over everything. But yeah, Daniel House, at least, he's a beneficiary of all of this.
You know what? Here's how we're going to frame things in a more positive light. This is not James Harden's darkest moment as a Houston Rocket. This is his big brother moment to Daniel House Jr. You know what? They spoke this summer. This is my new running theory. They spoke. Daniel House was dejected, upset about how he let the franchise down. And James Harden said, "Don't worry about it. I got you." Puts in a fake trade request, goes on a bender in Vegas, just brings all the social media spotlight to him so that everybody forgets about what happened with Daniel House Jr. We're going to hit the season running and everybody's going to forget about everything that just happened. One can hope. So let's go ahead and shift gears. I want to talk about Stephen Silas a little bit, because first off, you know, what a start for Stephen Silas to have to be dealing with all of, just again, gestures vaguely at everything, all of this going on right now. Yeah. But give me your read on him, because the thing that I've been noticing through these media sessions with Silas is that when he's asked about James Harden, you know, he seems, you know, just downright frustrated, you know, upset, you know, even about the situation. But then when he's asked actual basketball questions about the team or about, you know, the offense, the defense, you see that spark of joy light up again, because he's so enthusiastic, so passionate about the game of basketball. So give me your read on Silas so far.
Yeah, you can tell that when he's asked a non-Harden question, he's so much happier not to have to deal with that. I just feel so bad that in his first week being a true head coach at training camp after all these years of working, that he has to deal with this just insanity that's been happening. You know, again, he doesn't even really have a relationship with Harden because he's new, and so it's not like he's even comfortable like calling him up, or I suppose he could, but he doesn't have that rapport with Harden to where James would clearly listen to him like maybe he would if it was Mike D'Antoni. So he's just in a bad spot. I feel terrible for him that he's had to deal with it. But yeah, he's doing it as best he can. And you can tell that he's trying to make the most of the guys that are there. And what I've liked the most about Silas, beyond just the X's and O's, I enjoy that he says that they're trying to play with more pace. That's something we've talked about for a while, especially if you're trying to maximize John Wall, then, and he's supposedly healthy, then yeah, you want to pick up that pace, use your athleticism and speed to your advantage. Wall, Daniel House, Christian Wood, yeah, you should be able to do some great things in transition. And that's before we even get to hopefully having James Harden rejoin that starting lineup. But what I like the most about Silas, so this Rockets camp, it's a unique group in which I almost consider it the old Rockets and the new Rockets, because there's been so much change, you know, the young prospects that have been brought in, I'm sure we'll get to them. And then of course the guys like Christian Wood, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, the marquee addition to the offseason. And then you have the old guard, the guys that have been around, obviously Harden, but also Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker. Now Eric Gordon's happy, but that's because he got his contract extension last summer.
Come on.
Yeah.
Throw Gerald
He's
a
having
bone.
Fun.
Throw Gerald He's a bone. I want the old guard
Green.
In there.
Okay.
There we go. That's what I was whoa-whoing.
I thought you were asking for an Eric Gordon fun meter.
Obviously we've got to include the fun meter for Eric Gordon as well.
But it's like, you've got Harden, you've got EG, you've got Tucker, you've got Gerald as well. Gerald's happy no matter what. That's just his attitude. But, you know, Harden, we've talked at length, and I know you have as well, about what's going on with him. We'll see if they can eventually straighten it out or at least delay it long enough to get the trade that they want, the return. Tucker's sort of in between in that, you know, he hasn't won out of Houston. Actually, Tucker, from everything I understand, wants an extension that is yet to be given to him, in large part because he's 35 years old, and that's kind of risky to give an extension to somebody who's going to be 36 and you're a year out, so you don't even know what physical condition they're going to be in. Teams typically want to take those situations year by year. And so, yeah, when Tucker reported, and he was a day late, if you recall, he was still going through the protocols, and his media availability was a little chippy. You know, when they asked him about Harden, of course it was, I'm here to speak about PJ Tucker.
Yep.
And then when they asked him about the contract situation, he had two words. Next question. Basically, shout out Russell Westbrook, even though he's not here anymore.
Yep.
We still got the next question. And the point is, you know, there's definitely some tenseness. We know Tucker and Harden are close. There's also the contract situation. Yet, at the end of the availability, I'm sure you noticed this as well, Jackson, Tucker went out of his way to talk about how much he liked Stephen Silas. And to me, that spoke volumes, because of course the guys who signed here this offseason are going to like Stephen Silas. They knew going in that he was the coach. They may have talked to them when they had their options as far as potentially signing here or being traded here, whatever it may be. But can you get the old guys that have, you know, a ton of pedigree that could get traded perhaps if they wanted? You know, it'd be very easy for especially a PJ Tucker to sort of check out and say, this isn't for me. There's too much change. James isn't here. We heard in the playoffs how much PJ loved Mike D'Antoni. So for PJ, despite not, you know, it's clearly not everything is okay between PJ and the Rockets. There is some tenseness, especially as it comes to, or tension, I should say, excuse me, when it comes to the contract situation. And yet for Silas this quickly to have already won over PJ Tucker and get those kind of accolades, to me, that speaks really well to the fact that Silas should be liked by his players. And I think that ties in to the bigger picture, of course, is can you eventually make this work with James Harden? Not saying it's the same with James Harden as it is with PJ Tucker, but the comments from PJ Tucker, to me, more than any X's and O's, that's what I like the most about Stephen Silas this week.
Absolutely. It really does sound like Silas is starting to win over the locker room. And I think you put it so perfectly that, you know, it's so important to win over the old guard. And if you can do that with, you know, with PJ, with EG, which it sounds like there's a strong relationship there, which I do want to touch base on in a moment.
Sure.
Between Silas and EG, Gerald Green, obviously, who is, you know, I still maintain that, as soon as Gerald can get into Harden's ear a little bit, once he's, back in a Houston Rockets jersey and, reporting to Cam, and, you know, actually hanging out with the guys, that maybe Gerald Green can do a little bit of convincing and potentially get his head on right. But we'll get to Eric Gordon, Christian Wood, John Wall, Cousins, you know, the rest of the guys here in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, Ben, my EG question that I've been sitting on is, you know, one, we've seen so far, apparently that relationship between Silas and EG is very strong. You know, Silas has commented multiple times that, you know, EG has been, you know, a welcome voice, you know, kind of, you know, communicating with him about, you know, throughout this this early part of training camp, getting acclimated to being the new head coach, you know, him leaning heavily on Eric Gordon's veteran presence. But I think the thing that really stands out is Eric Gordon dropped quite a bombshell, saying that, you know, there's a culture shift going on with the Rockets. And I think that that quote was quite powerful. In fact, it wasn't in his media availability that was posted to the YouTube channel. I scoured for it because I wanted to play it back. And I don't know if they intentionally cut it or what. But can you speak on that a little bit and what your read is for that?
Yeah, I don't know if he meant that it was a big deal, but it easily could be. It's one of those things that's, you know, sometimes we all say that it's a new culture, and it's, in this case, it's understandable because there's a coach. But then when you consider, especially the Athletic article and how culture was referenced in some of the various players being disgruntled this past year that led to this tumultuous offseason, then yeah, it easily could be. And of course, that's where it helps having, you know, not just changes in the offseason, but you bring in guys like John Wall and Boogie Cousins, 4- and 5-time All-Stars. These are guys with pedigree, Jackson. And so not just the coach, but having guys, and we've seen the pictures. We don't get to see training camp, of course, because no one's at Toyota Center because of the pandemic and everything is virtual for us. But the pictures that the Rockets have put out, you know, you can see how much fun, yes, shout out EG, that these guys are having, especially John Wall and Boogie Cousins. So in addition to the coach, then having these veterans that have been around the league that are clearly buying into this situation and being happy to be here, despite some of the turmoil, especially in recent days with the James Harden uncertainty, then yeah, I think it speaks well to the fact that at least to start the year, this team seems to be, I don't know if gelling, if that's truly something you can say before they've even played a preseason game, but they're at least starting on the right foot when it comes to how they're bonding with one another in the locker room. And again, I think Gordon is potentially a useful bridge because, you know, you have all these new pieces. And then there's Gerald, although, number one, Gerald's always happy. And secondly, we still don't know for sure if Gerald's even going to make the final roster. My guess is that he does, but a non-guaranteed training camp deal, it remains to be seen. And even if he does, he's not a clear rotation piece. But Gordon is the one bridge. He got his extension, so I understand why. But he's the one bridge between the old guard, James Harden, PJ Tucker. He's got good relationships with those guys and other members of the organization that have been around the last few years. And yet he's also got relationships with this new cast that have come in and seem to be, you know, as we were just saying, gelling in the opening days of training camp. So I think the fact that Gordon is going out of his way to build a relationship with the new guys and with the new coach, Stephen Silas, we heard Silas mention the other day that he's talked to Gordon almost every day since taking the job. And I'm sure Gordon has filled him in on some of the backstory of various dynamics, how to handle it. Then perhaps that's sort of the bridge. You can throw Daniel House Jr. in there as well, and that, you know, Gordon is someone that it sounds like will vouch for him. I think back to the first day of training camp, Gordon was asked, you know, does House need to do anything else to make amends? And Gordon basically said, no, he's owned up to it. And at this point, we just try to move forward. And so I think EG is in a useful spot in that he's been around. This is his 4th or 5th season with the team. So he's seen a lot, yet be it for contractual reasons or otherwise, he doesn't have the current disgruntled state that James Harden and PJ Tucker have. So beyond just the obvious stuff, they've raved about his defense, which we know in the playoffs he can turn it up. Hopefully he's healthier this year. It doesn't sound like he's going to have his surgery early in the year, so hopefully he shoots better from the field, gets back to the Eric Gordon from before this past season. All of that would be useful, but I also think, you know, again, the new guard and the old guard, Eric Gordon is sort of in a unique spot to help bridge that. And so it sounds like beyond what he can do on the court, Eric Gordon's been pretty useful these last few weeks in sort of trying to mend fences behind the scenes and bring some of these various factions together.
You know, I think one guy that I haven't spoken to until just now, but, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know, kind of how you were describing Eric Gordon, his potential role bridging the gap between these two ages in Rockets basketball, these two factions, John Lucas. You know, he's going to be an integral part of, you know, any attempt to convince James Harden that the Rockets are an organization worth staying in, that they are, you know, still a championship pedigree organization that, you know, that is aspiring to try and win a title. And, you know, having him as well as EG, as well as Tucker, you know, that old guard, you know, having him on staff under Silas will hopefully help in repairing that relationship with James Harden. But then also go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, in hindsight, it would also explain why Lucas was such a clear top-tier candidate during the coaching search, and fortunately they were able to keep him in an assistant role. But I think a lot of us wondered in October, Lucas, who has not been a head coach in 17 years, why is he getting so much attention alongside pretty big names, like certainly Jeff Van Gundy and Ty Lue, but also Stephen Silas, who was a pretty clear top commodity in the NBA. Why is John Lucas alongside them when he wasn't even on the front row of Mike D'Antoni's bench as far as the top tier of assistants? I think that's why. We now know some of the issues that were going on with this team last season, and Lucas is potentially very useful in terms of addressing that.
Absolutely. And another guy that, one, you know, it sounds like everything that we've heard and from the little bit of video footage that we've been able to see, John Wall looks great. And I think it was really important to hear you know, him be able to recount the moment that he felt like that he was back, quote unquote. You know, the fact that he had a pinpoint moment, somebody asked him, and I can't remember who, unfortunately, you know, asked him, when did you really feel like you were back? And Wall said, well, there was this moment in March where I was playing a pickup game and, you know, we were running 3-on-3s, 4-on-4s, and he said he was doing things on the court that he was doing pre-injury, that he was happy that he had, you know, that level of explosion back. He was able to do certain things out there that he wasn't able to do, you know, not having to, I guess, you know, check himself on the court about, you know, going 100% or whatever. And hearing that is great because it really does. You look on paper at this team, and if you're able to get a healthy John Wall, a healthy DeMarcus Cousins, you know, further down the list, a healthy David Nwaba, this team is extremely talented and versatile. But above all that, John Wall, you spoke about him earlier. He's a guy with pedigree in the NBA. He has a voice, and he's got some prominence in the league. And I think one area that we can probably agree on that James Harden has struggled in throughout his Rockets tenure is he's just not that vocal leader. He's not that emotional leader. And, you know, throughout, especially the last 3 years specifically, and you can even predate that and go all the way back to when Patrick Beverley was a member of the Houston Rockets, where Beverley was kind of the heart and soul of the team, that, you know, that vocal kind of, although he didn't hold the same pedigree that a Chris Paul or a Russell Westbrook did. But Harden largely, I feel like, needs that, you know, that guy next to him who is the vocal leader of the team. And John Wall is stepping into that position because it was Russell Westbrook last season. You know, Russell Westbrook, for all intents and purposes, was the vocal leader of the team. So it'll be really interesting to see that dynamic play out and how those two guys mesh together as the season progresses.
And I also think this is a ways away, but the season hasn't started yet. Let's have some fun. Let's be optimistic. Look, if John Wall plays well, he's only 30 years old. His game on paper, because he's fairly cerebral, should age well. It's not like Russell Westbrook, where the shooting is so bad that once the athleticism starts to go, there's nothing there. Now, granted, John Wall is a blur, and so you want him to be fast, but as long as he's still somewhat fast, he has the IQ, his shooting has been improving, that he can be good. Look, he's only 30 years old. This is a team, the Rockets, you know, we've been talking the last few years about them, you know, getting older. He's 30. He signed for at least 2 more years. But from a practical standpoint, Wall's basically signed for 3 years. I do not see him turning down a $47 million player option for the 2023 season. So look, he's someone that conceivably could be around a while. And in a situation in which there's a lot of upheaval with regards to the organization as a whole, I think most of us, you know, while we're rooting for the Harden situation to work out, I think the vast majority of us understand that a year from now, James Harden is probably not going to be on the team. That would be my guess. Now, does it happen before the season? Does it happen at the trade deadline? Does it happen next offseason? I don't know. But my guess is that Harden is not here a year from now, and that's unfortunate. But you know what? John Wall could be the sort of guy that bridges you to the next generation as you're trying to, you know, build the next generation of talents for the Rockets. Having a cerebral star point guard sounds like he's happy to be here. He wants to rebuild his career here, and conceivably, if this works out, you know, he could be with you for a while and could sort of be a stabilizing force in a period that if you're losing a top five player, not that Harden will walk for nothing, but conceivably you would be trading him, then Wall could be beyond just pairing Wall and Harden right now. That's exciting. Wall could also be sort of a bridge to get you to whatever is next after Harden. He, especially with how good of a floor general, a leader he is, he could sort of help you both on and off the court develop some of your younger prospects. And so I think that's something to be excited about as well.
Yeah, and you know, it is tough because, like you said, we're all rooting, you know, myself included, even though I've been fairly harsh and critical of Harden and his behavior over the last, you know, pretty much the entire offseason, sorry. But specifically the last, you know, 48 to 72 hours and everything that has been, you know, pouring into the social media channels. But, you know, you look at the potential and the, you know, with the writing on the wall that, you know, it's more than likely that this organization probably does move on from Harden, you know, at least by next summer. You look at John Wall and you look at also DeMarcus Cousins as two guys who could potentially be poised for bounce back years here in Houston. And then, you know, if you do get a decent haul back for James Harden, then suddenly you're looking at, okay, you've got Wall, you've got a healthy Wall, a healthy DeMarcus Cousins, who I would assume if they have a resurgent season together, yeah, that relationship is so strong, I wouldn't picture Boogie Cousins bouncing next offseason to go to another team if he's happy here in Houston, you know, playing alongside John Wall, getting a chance to, you know, rekindle that friendship, that brotherhood, right, that they had in college. And then you've got a foundation of really strong chemistry, really strong bonds and ties. You bring in whatever young haul you're getting for the Harden trade. And then a couple years even further down the line, you've got an expiring in John Wall, you know, who could potentially then, you, and this is again very much further down the line, but then you've got a gigantic expiring that you could potentially flip into the next guy to be part of a centerpiece of a rekindled Houston Rockets franchise. So it's not like the Rockets aren't in a perpetual, you know, decade-long tank mode, you know, because at the forefront of it, they're going to have whatever asset package come back for James Harden. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people aren't focusing on enough, that if they deal James Harden, they are going to be jump-starting a rebuild. They aren't not starting from scratch. They're not going to be put in a position like the Knicks or the Kings or even the Spurs, who didn't get a very big package back for Kawhi Leonard because of his preference of going to LA and the fact that Popovich also turned down a gigantic offer. You know, the AD package could have been had for Kawhi Leonard, but out of just sheer stubbornness, Popovich opted to send him to Toronto. He sent him as far away from LA as he possibly could. So, you know, I think that as long as the Rockets franchise don't turn their noses up at the best offer on the table, which is a fear that maybe they don't, they aren't willing to potentially listen to an offer from the 76ers to maybe potentially spite Daryl Morey, who knows. That, you know, right now the Ben Simmons offer is probably the best one on the table for James, but it might not be the best one next offseason.
Yeah, if it's available. But one quick point on that, we touched on this earlier, but I do view it as a positive sign that Harden's camp has pivoted to the Sixers, because there's no reason for Harden or whoever leaked that to Woj today to do that if they had an idea that Philly was not a realistic destination. Quite frankly, they would stick with Brooklyn because that's what he wanted in the first place. And we know this all started with the offseason workouts and Harden's relationship going back more than a decade with Kevin Durant. So the fact that Harden is already making it clear that, hey, it's not just the Nets, I'm okay with the 76ers, to me, that sends a signal that on some level they believe that the Sixers are perhaps a more desirable or realistic trade partner for the Rockets than the Nets. And if that's the case, then of course it speaks to the fact that the Rockets are focused on what they should be focused on, which is getting the best return you can, regardless of whether you're sending him to Brooklyn, whether you're sending him to Daryl Morey, whatever it may be. None of that matters. It's what you get here in Houston. And so the fact that Harden's camp is sort of pivoting from the Nets to the Sixers, to me, that seems to suggest that for some reason, maybe they've been directly told, maybe it's just reading between the lines, but they seem to believe that Philly is a more realistic destination than Brooklyn, and that probably says something good about the Rockets.
All right, I've got two more questions for you, Ben, before we sign things off. First off, likelihood of Christian Wood potentially winning Most Improved Player of the Year?
It's possible. Now, granted, he could have competition on his own team, because I think Daniel House Jr. again, it would not surprise me, especially if Harden were to get dealt at some point. I could see House really stepping into a bigger role. I'm not saying he's going to become an all-star or anything crazy like that, but it's certainly possible that he could step into a much bigger role than we saw from him a year ago. We did see at times he was getting more comfortable with the step backs, with creating off the dribble. So I could see House giving a run for his money just within his own team. And then, of course, you've got John Wall, you've got James Harden. So the question is, are there enough touches to go around for that? You never know. Maybe there's a situation where Michael Porter Jr., although, of course, he's competing for touches with Jamal Murray and Jokic. So it's possible. Yeah, I'll say that it's doable. I mean, people have raved about him. He's going to get every opportunity for a team that needs youth, that needs size. It's at least possible.
And then last one is going to be DeMarcus Cousins. Chances of him potentially winning sixth man of the year.
Whew. I'm going to say no, just because...
Yeah, that one's a big stretch, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stretch. And the bigger thing, I think they're going to manage his minutes. I thought it was very interesting. I asked what factors led him to sign with the Rockets, because he did so before the John Wall trade, which he talked about a lot. Now, maybe they already had an inkling behind the scenes that that deal was going to get done, but it wasn't official then. So it's not like you could bank 100% of, you know, your signing decision on that. And when DeMarcus responded to me, the first thing he pointed to, and he spent a decent amount of time explaining it, was the training staff. He was explaining that he talked with the Rockets and he thought they had the best plan as far as managing him to get back to where he wanted to be. So my guess is that he's going to have some maintenance games. You may see him, you know, his minutes capped at a certain amount, maybe 20 a game. And I think, you know, it's one of those things sort of like the Nene plan. Now, not that he's that old, basically to where you're trying to slowly build him up through the season so that he can be the best version of himself by the playoffs, when he can really stand out, have fun. Hopefully if the Rockets keep hard and they have an opportunity to make some noise in the Western Conference. But I think with Boogie, I'm optimistic about him. Everybody says great things, but my guess is that the winner of Sixth Man of the Year will be someone who plays a little more minutes and is a little bit more durable. I think the Rockets, by design, after the ACL, after the Achilles, the quad, everything that he's been through, they'll be cautious with managing Boogie to just try and make sure that he makes it through the season healthy. To me, that's pretty clear the top priority for both the team and Boogie.
That's fair. And you know what? It actually makes way for Eric Gordon to win his second Sixth Man of the Year award.
There you
go. we'll stick with that instead. All right, Ben, appreciate you taking the time to join us today. As always, go ahead and take a chance to plug your stuff at the very end.
Sure thing. Ben Dubose on Twitter, the Rockets Wire on Twitter, and rocketswire.usatoday.com for the stories.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Ben. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Now for that, for today's episode, that's going to be where we wrap things up. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.